Give me a T.
T.
L.
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 T.
T.
S.
S.
What's that spell?
Cracking up every time.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mind.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 271. Today is Wednesday, October 29th. Welcome everybody to the show.
The Halloween show.
Happy Halloween.
Boogie, boogie, boogie.
We've got a full house tonight. We've got Link. We've got Alan.
Yes.
We've got Dan, but it's Candy.
Ho, ho.
And we got Chad Wallenberg.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Yeah,
Link
yeah.
is leaving soon. Link is still not feeling well. Link has a horrible chest cold. Link is also on call and needs to get some rest.
Link needs a cuddle.
Yes, I do. And my Dan, the cuddle man, is way the hell in Virginia. I keep telling him to come over here and make me feel better. You know, we can spoon up a little bit. But he's left me behind for Chad. So,
make me cry.
I just have to snuggle up with my laptop and my picture of Davey H and his wearable computer tonight. Something.
For those who don't know, there's this picture somebody posted in the forum of a guy in his underwear with, like, pieces of a desktop computer, like, taped to him with duct tape.
It's quite something.
And he said it was Dave Yates, but it's clearly it's not Dave Yates.
Yeah, get it right. It's not just any guy. It's Dave Yates.
Well, listen, I have a... Before I go... I just wanted to pop on and say hello to everybody because I know I wasn't feeling well either. I'm still alive and still kicking.
I love you.
But before I go, I wanted to pop on and tell everybody Halloween and ask everybody a question. That question is,
42.
Since we know that the new Ubuntu is coming out, is it tomorrow or Friday?
Tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow? The 30th. Okay,
yeah, the 30th.
Ubuntu is coming out. And that would be Intrepid, is it Intrepid Ibex or something like that?
Yep. Intrepid Ibex.
That's Cooney. All right, anyway, it's 8.10. That's coming out tomorrow. I have my home server, which I had upgraded last year to 7.04. Okay, so it's getting pretty long in the tooth, right? Can't get anything really updated for it anymore because it's so old. So my question to you all is, should I upgrade this old server to the new Ubuntu? Should I leave it alone? Or should I go for a different flavor of Linux? And if
Slack.
Flavor, if a different flavor is in order, what flavor? I'm tending to lead towards one of two things. I'm tending to lead towards either putting CentOS 5.2 on it, because that keeps me in practice for running the Red Hat servers I have to run at work, you know, or possibly going back to Slackware and putting that on there, but then if I do Slackware, it sort of becomes a cyclical problem with the upgrade thing again, because once you have Slackware running in the server, you just never need to touch it. You know what I mean? never need to upgrade it or anything like that. It'll just sit in the corner, chug away, and I won't get to play with it. Well, so what does everybody think? Discuss it amongst yourselves. Let me know in the chat.
What's the specs on this machine?
It's my old ThinkPad. Is it T1 or something?
So you want to upgrade it from Windows 2000 to one of the Ubuntus?
Well, I was thinking, I wanted to upgrade it from Linux, so I was thinking about putting Windows 95 on.
Can you get OS 10 running on that thing?
I stay stick with 3.11.
3.11? What do you use it for?
That's a good question. That's probably relevant for the upgrade information. It runs everything. It runs web server, web dev. It's a LAMP server, you know, Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP. Web dev. It does, DNS, DHCP, Samba shares, NFS shares, the gamut. It also does all my email, IMAP. It's an everything server. Like I said, it's a server. I mean, this one really does its business pretty damn well for a beat-up old freaking laptop. But
Debian, man. Go Debian.
Stuff, man.
And this is 0704, right? So this is back on Is it Gutsy? No. Hardy, Gutsy.
Pretty feisty, right?
Feisty.
Quite feisty, yeah. And before that it was 604, so that was a hell of an upgrade. That was a pain in the ass.
See, I'm wondering if the upgrade from feisty to intrepid might be a pain in the butt. You might be better off.
Because it's such a large version jump, I'm probably going to have to do a clean install. So it really doesn't matter one way or the other. You know what I mean? I'm probably just going to back it up, and I'm going to put a whole new install of whatever on there and then start sticking services back on and get it going again.
The two things I read that were new in Intrepid Server were the they have Tomcat and a new version of Tomcat on there, and I think, you know, Tomcat 6, I guess you would say what it is. And also the email. They have some kind of new email system. So if you're running email, you might want to look at it. It might be worth it. I don't know.
And it's running Ubuntu now, right?
Right.
If you're going to wipe it out, why don't you just try and do an in-place upgrade? And if it doesn't work, just wipe it out.
Supposedly you can upgrade to Hardy from any of those previous versions. I don't know about to IBEX, though, but definitely to Hardy, and then you can upgrade from Hardy to IBEX.
Yeah, I'd be skeptical to go all the way to IBEX. Sorry, Chad, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, I was just saying that's one of the things they flaunt. They say that you should always be able to upgrade to a long-term support.
Upgrade that bitch to Slackware. You know what's going to happen? No matter what we say, he's still going to go with either CentOS or Red Hat, because he's gone over to the Red Hat side now.
No Red Hat. Not unless you're running Enterprise.
Why not Fedora?
And you got to have subscription stuff for that. Fedora is too bleeding edge, I think. You know what I mean? It's nice and all, but it breaks too frequently because it's so bleeding edge. And that's, you know, it's not as much of a concern of mine with Ubuntu, because Ubuntu seems to pull that off a lot better. That's one of the reasons that I haven't run Arch Linux in a long time, because they're so bleeding edge that they break every other night. You know? Get up in the morning and your X doesn't work anymore or some shit like that.
Well, if you want something that's not bleeding edge and stable, you want SUSE Linux Enterprise. Right there. That's 4 years old?
Either, you know?
That's
it's only
stale.
It's only like a 30 gig hard drive, right?
Oh, huh. If you could throw another, like...
They actually came out with a service pack then of SLED.
I want to have room for my email, too, right?
Run a .NET email server.
It's Exchange. It just installs Windows. It virtualizes Vista and runs Exchange and IIS. What is the SLED service pack?
It's a service pack. It's basically just an update to the whole operating system. That's what they do. They follow, like, the whole Microsoft thing. They release a service pack. I think they've done one or maybe even two already of it.
Trolls would know. I think he's drinking.
He went back to SUSE, didn't he?
It's either SUSE or Open SUSE.
He's doing Open SUSE.
You know, I have to say, you know, for a server, it's tough not to go with just pure Debian.
Yeah, Debian is awesome on server.
Now, Chad, I know, is like at Mark Shuttleworth's teat there for his...
I still have one Debian server. I did upgrade most of my Debian servers to Ubuntu. Like, I actually like having the more up-to-date packages. So that's, you know... Etch right now is getting pretty old.
Yeah.
Might be worth just a couple months.
Well, you can install Lenny, can't you? From Test and Repos?
Yeah.
And just upgrade it when it goes official?
If you're going to do something like that, why not just go with Ubuntu?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you have a low-resource system, I mean, Debian won't install on anything, literally anything.
Ubuntu server is just about the same thing, though. You know, the hoggy part of Ubuntu is the desktop portion of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you have problems installing Ubuntu server, you can use what they call the alternate install CD. It's a little more trimmed down, the installer, if you have, like, you know, an older system.
Don't they have a net install for that yet?
What, for the new version?
For Ubuntu in some way.
Not Ubuntu, I don't think.
No?
I don't think they have an installer.
They do, but it's hard to find. It's not like right on their main page. You have to search for it. But you can do it. I think Dave Yates was talking about that one time. Or maybe it wasn't Dave. I don't know.
Because that install is great. I love doing Debian installs like that.
Oh, yeah. It's so awesome. That is... You know, I got to give credit where credit's due. The Debian... net install is fantastic, and also Mandriva's net install was really good. The one net install that I found to be a horrendous pain in the ass was, of course, OpenSUSE.
Really?
Would it take like a year to install?
Well, first off, you had to manually track down. If I recall correctly, you had to manually. Track down a server and put the address in. Maybe that has changed, but it was just... made me want to cry. Unlike Debian or Mandriva, where they're already... You know, you just pick the one you want, the mirror you want, and you're good to go. But that's neither here nor there. I have a feeling this is what will happen. Link will ask us for all this advice, he'll turn around and we'll read a blog posting how he decided to install NetBSD on the machine.
I thought about that, and I come really, really close to doing it except for one thing. The last time I tried NetBSD, there was something broken in their NAMP package, the Apache, MySQL, and PHP. For some reason... You could not get PHP to talk to MySQL. I just didn't want it. Otherwise, I probably would have jumped right on that. That's a nice, lean, clean install. And it would have been fun to play with again. But as it happens, I probably will end up installing CentOS on there just so that I can maintain my skills for work and stuff like that. unless somebody comes up with like a really wonderful reason to keep trucking along with Ubuntu. I mean, you know, I might do that too. If it works out that that I could do an upgrade and actually have it work. I mean, the last one that I did worked, it was a little hairy upgrading it because it really didn't want to be. You know what I mean? It's, the versions were so old that the upgrade wasn't clean. But I suspect that that would not be the case this time, that it would go a lot better. And if it, you know, if it happens that that works, that might just be the case. It might be interesting to do something different for a while, too, you know?
Rowing golfer says Gen 2.
Gen 2.
Gen 2.
Yeah, that's...
I think he wants to use this server, not watch it compile.
That wouldn't even be any fun doing that because it's headless. So,
yeah.
You don't even get the fun of watching the GCC screensaver on a headless server.
Well, you can over a screened SSH session.
Hey, way to talk about headless servers on a Halloween episode.
There you go.
Headless server.
The legend of the headless server.
Uh-oh, somebody's calling me. Hold on.
Well, we can start. Like, Intrepid's coming out officially tomorrow, but a lot of people have jumped the gun. You can install one of the release candidates, and it's pretty much the final version with just a few updates, you know, afterwards. So that's what I did to beat the rush today. I actually upgraded two machines. I upgraded my server, and that took about 10 minutes to do. And then I installed my laptop. Now, Chad, I saw you were on Identica. You were upgrading your machines too, weren't you?
I just updated my desktop at work, and it went flawlessly.
Did you download?
Which one of you guys is running a mirror of the stuff so that we on the show can get our upgrades without waiting in line with everybody else?
Yeah, good luck.
I will. I'll throw the torrent up in the morning. I did last time. If I can grab it, I'll throw it up.
Torrent. Come on.
Wait. Did you, Pat and Chad, download an IS?
No, I just did.
No.
I just did a disk upgrade.
That's what I did too.
Yeah, I just changed everything to Intrepid.
Exactly. Changed the sources. The Etsy sources was file.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, I see a lot of people say, you know, I grabbed the latest IS. I just changed everything to Intrepid. I did that, last week?
So you mean you're all upgraded to the new version already. You're not going to help anybody else out.
Screw you.
Screw the rest of the listeners. No way. Go away.
The only issue I've had so far is that in Ubuntu...
You're all running your own home servers.
In GNOME, on the places entries, you know, for like home folder and documents and stuff, for whatever reason, it's changed that so that it tries to open up the archives manager.
I bet if Dave Yates was doing it, that he would have an ISO up for people to download, because he's cool.
Dave has an ISO up on his left thigh. You can go pull it off of there. Yeah, you can go pull it off of there.
Is that a CD in your pocket, or are you having a CD?
Actually, he's got a torrent coming out of his backside. You just point your client to that. With that.
People are asking about Pulse Audio. I haven't had any issues so far.
Last time I upgraded from Gutsy to Hardy, and my audio just went to complete pot. This time I had zero problems with audio whatsoever.
I have an issue with what is it, Phonon? That's the KDE sound server, right?
Yeah, Phonon? It's the abstraction layer.
Yeah, for some reason, Phonon, every time I start up KDE, it comes up and says Phonon has a problem and shuts down. But I don't have a problem with running any audio or Pulse Audio stuff.
The problem is you're running KDE.
Shut up. What's wrong with KDE 4.1 is I actually like it. Unlike you.
The problem I have with audio is for my MAME stuff. I've got no audio left in MAME anymore since I've upgraded. Maybe upgrading to the latest version will fix that. Hopefully.
Does MAME still use, like, OSS?
Yeah, I think it still uses that. And I've got that loaded, but I had audio for about 2 days. And then something went fluky on this machine, and I had no audio at that point. And I had to go in and, like, wipe out a whole shitload of files, and the audio came back, but the audio in MAME never came back. So, I don't know what the hell it is.
It wasn't just files, it was a shitload of files.
Yeah, it was a shitload, yeah, it was about 5 or 6 of them.
I mean, you know, I'm sure there's a way to fix that, Alan.
I'm sure there is, but that seemed to be the easiest way that actually worked. So.
It sounds like the curse of Tim McGraw to me.
Yeah, RTFM, no, wasn't that pal. Curse of Tim McGraw.
It wasn't that bad.
Is that like Montezuma's Revenge? Except in reverse?
Except in reverse, yeah. It's Daniel
just crap.
All right, what the hell are they doing here?
All right, guys. One thing that drove me nuts when I upgraded, I went to lock my screen after I rebooted, and I hit the little man, you know, the little man that you hit to, like, log out or whatever, and the choice isn't there anymore. You only have 2 choices. You have shut down or log out, which I know it sounds stupid, but it was just annoying. Just a weird little thing that they've changed.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought I had everything.
When you hit the little guy, you know, sits on the bar, you know, the little guy.
Yeah, I use that all the time. Well, I'm using XFCE at work. I haven't shut down, I had everything in there. Suspend, shut down, sleep, lock. There's like 6 options.
It must be just in the GNOME then that they've done this. It was a little crazy to me.
Link, did you just say you're leaving?
Yeah, I'm out of here.
All right, about damn time.
Get off the bed.
I hope you feel better, Link.
Yeah, now you guys can enjoy the rest of your show, I'm sure.
Take care, Link.
Have a good one.
Yeah, everybody, you feel better. I'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one. Now we get down to the real nitty-gritty here.
This is when we talk bad about Link now.
Yeah, Chad wants to talk to us about Mono. He's got two new applications coming out. Closed source applications.
A comic book reader.
His Linux basement is going completely Blip TV. Silverlight. Yes.
Yep.
Now, Chad, I have to commend you, man. After Ohio Linux Fest, you got all those videos that you took, you got them posted, like, within hours after it was over.
Yeah, I fired them out pretty quick. The site's been dead since then. I'm finally coming out with my latest episode tomorrow. But, man, I fired them up pretty quick. I got some halfway decent videos.
Yeah, the all-time favorite is Dan showing his ass to, what, crowd of 1,000 people.
No doubt. That's had a good 600-700 views. Probably because people dug it, you know.
Those poor people.
I keep viewing it, too, and I pass it around to people like I work with and stuff. So.
That is the most popular one.
The security hasn't put a picture of you, Dan, up by the front desk?
Not yet.
I think the video was taken off of YouTube for vulgarity, but no one said a thing to me about taking it down. I guess Blip TV just doesn't care.
Yeah, I don't think they're as stringent as YouTube. I still don't understand why it was taken off of YouTube.
Me either. There's women all flashing their junk around all the time.
It must have been the copyright trip mark on Dan's ass cheek.
That's it. I thought I released my ass under Creative Commons. Share alike.
I guess not.
But somebody must copyrighted it.
Share and share alike.
Damn it. I think Steve Jobs copyrighted it. He's got the patent on my...
You just have to put it back up there. That's all.
You know what is a shame about that, though, is we're still waiting for the original photo to be released by Baconator, and I think he's holding out on everybody if he hasn't sent it to the hit bucket in the sky.
He's a rock star now, you know. Between now and then, he's become, you know, I mean, he's going to be on MTV soon. You're never going to get your ass picture.
It'll float out one day.
He's probably shopping it around to, like, you know, some fetish website or something.
You'll be the new Lemon Party.
Aw. That's not nice. That's terrible. So why did we bring Chad on tonight?
Well, originally we were going to have the Drupal guys on, and I assume that's the reason why he wanted to come on.
Well, yeah, we talked about it. Dan said he'd come on anyway. We talked on the drive back that maybe I'd come on sometime and talk about open source and education. I've recently moved our entire school district over to Open Office, and I've got a project going with the state of Virginia to promote open source software in the classroom. So I figured I'd talk a little bit about that with you guys. I figured people would be interested to see the trials and tribulations and the triumphs of moving, you know, 800 staff members and 4,000 students over to Open Office and tell you about the bruises that I've gotten.
Yeah, I'm definitely, you know, very interested in this and how it worked for you. And, well, you know what? Let's hear it, man. What exactly did you do?
Yeah, you want me to take a step back and give you the whole thing?
Yeah, let's start from the beginning, because I've heard the beginning, but Pat and Alan and these things we call listeners haven't.
Sure. So for those who don't know, my day job is not actually Linux Basement. I'm an IT manager for a school district in Southern Virginia. And actually, very beginning of this year, around March or so, we went ahead with a plan to replace our email server with Gmail. We were running Exchange, and we moved it over to Gmail. At about the same time, we realized that all of our Office, Microsoft Office XP licenses were expiring. Now, I've been working on my boss for a couple of years now to, get him into open source. I've introduced all sorts of stuff, Drupal. I've talked about it before. But I've had him run an open office, and, you know, it was the perfect time to say, look, we've got all these users. If we give them Office 2007, they're going to have a learning curve anyway, right? Because everyone freaks out when you put Office 2007 in front of them with the little ribbons and all this. Why don't we give Open Office a real try and see, you know, see what happens? So that sparked off a whole, you know, huge plan on rolling this stuff out this summer, which is exactly what we did. We literally went around to over 2,000 computers and ripped off Microsoft Office and put on Open Office. And during this whole process, I've been working with the state on a few other projects. I know Dan knows, but I basically came up with this really good connection. The Secretary of Technology for Virginia State kind of got wind of what I was doing with open source down there. And so I've been working with him on trying to lower the barrier of entry for other state entities, businesses, whatever, to get into open source. And I actually got a grant to document the migration of our district from Microsoft products over to Google Apps, Open Office, and even encompasses Drupal, things like Drupal, Moodle, Asterisk, the whole nine. So this is really cool because I got a $50,000 grant, and I was actually able to hire someone to come in and document the process. And part of the grant is to build a basically community that for education integration of open source in the classroom. And the website's up. It's heavily under construction. We only started it about 3 weeks ago. The person we hired to do this was hired October 1st. And everyone can check it out at it's called the Virginia Open Classroom Project, and it's vaopenclassroom.org. And I'll post that in the chat room as well. But so it's kind of cool.
Question yeah. Before you get too far. Now, why? What do you mean you hired somebody to document the process? Is this somebody to design like web content, or exactly what does this person document?
Yeah, so that's a real good question. So the whole purpose of this grant is basically to get the documentation, the goods, the bads, you know, the very uglies of moving our school district from, you know, proprietary software to open source software. And you know, we don't have the manpower to do that ourselves and to make it worthwhile. So we were actually able to hire someone to come on and just accumulate data, you know, what works really well, what doesn't work, it's just horrible. This person will actually work with some of the entities, like they'll actually be working directly with Google, and they're going to put all this information on the website that I've created. And, you know, we're part of consortiums and things down in our region, and we're basically trying to get other districts behind the project and basically lower the barrier of entry for them to use open source software in their district and kind of, you know, increase collaboration in the process. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, no, it does.
So the lady just came out. She's already accumulated quite a lot of data. But we're literally trying to get all the technical information from people, you know, how do you move your Exchange server off of Exchange and to Gmail? How do you, and then very instructional things and very customer service oriented things. You know, what is the worst thing about, OpenOffice that people complain about the most? What is the best thing about OpenOffice that people love? We're just trying to get all that stuff out in the open so people know what they're getting into and kind of really, you know, really, really understand how open source can benefit them. Now, one of the reasons we got this grant from the state was because we saved over $200,000 just for our district doing this. And that's over a course of 3 years. So it's an enormous savings, particularly when you think of how small of a district we are. And if the state ended up adopting something like this, you're literally talking about tens of millions of dollars. So they have a vested interest in seeing this type of thing succeed, which is why the documentation process is so important.
There's so many questions I have for you. I don't even know where to begin. So I'm just going to say to hell with it, and I'm done with the show tonight.
So do you want me? All right, go ahead.
Do I want you to what?
Do you want me to kind of tell you where we're at now? Now that you know teachers came back in September and came back to know Microsoft and kind of how that's going.
Did they freak out?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, they totally did.
Because this part of my question. Go ahead.
Sure. So you know, the beginning of September, the teachers came back. And because the decision was made so hastily, it wasn't made hastily, but we didn't do a large testing group. So very few people even knew that we were making this migration. So it was literally just mass shock when people came back. A lot of hate mail. You know, they tried to run me down a rail in the middle of town, but I'm pretty quick, you know. but in all seriousness, like it was literally a train wreck. We're very fortunate that we have four trainers that go around the school district and literally do classes and literally do training one-on-one with people to get them up to speed. I would say that the email migration went absolutely flawlessly. The OpenOffice migration, had it been OpenOffice 3, I think would have went a lot better. ended up being OpenOffice 2.4, and we're having some very serious compatibility issues with state documents and with PowerPoints importing. I was actually shocked at how many teachers actually were teaching off of PowerPoints. Now, I'm not going to get into a discussion on why that could be wrong to begin with, but the fact that they've created all these lesson plans in PowerPoint and then all of a sudden they can't import them and can't use them was a serious problem. So we're in the process of working through those, you know, those special cases and trying to make everyone happy. I would say right now it's 50-50. 50% of the population is okay with it and understand why we did it. 50% either has very serious problems or don't understand the logistics behind it. And one of the things I want to point out real quick, and then you can ask away, is one of the interesting things and one of the ways I pushed this was, and this is something everybody needs to think about, and this is why I thought it was important to come on and talk about this. I live in a very, very poor county in Virginia. In fact, we're the second poorest county in Virginia. I think it's 30% of the population here lives in poverty. And we're sending high schoolers home and requiring them to do work on Microsoft Office.
I've heard stories of other school districts around the country requiring that their students go out and purchase a copy of Microsoft Office. Let me tell you something.
I'm saying.
If my kids get to that point, my head's going to explode.
This is what I'm saying. There is actually a moral issue in requiring people at a poverty level to have to go out, and even if they do get student rates, it doesn't matter. These people can barely buy food. And we're requiring these students who are going to be struggling anyway to then also, you know, throw buying Microsoft Office on top. It's crazy. So by moving to OpenOffice, we're actually completely getting rid of this barrier. We can, you know, we can give OpenDisk CDs, which we do, you know, the OpenDisk project, to teachers, to students, let them go home, load it up on any machine that they've got, completely cross-platform, doesn't cost anybody a dime. And we're, you know, literally helping the student population. So this was a huge thing, and it's something that a lot of these people who are still complaining that we migrated over just don't understand. You know, they don't a lot of these people didn't even know, I would say 90% of these people didn't even know that OpenOffice existed before, you know, we put it on their computers. So that's an interesting aspect to it, and I really believe that we are, everyone should think, you know, why is your school district requiring your students to have a Microsoft Office license to do work? It's crazy. I'll shut up now. You want to ask questions?
Okay, so I guess working from latest to whatever the hell pops into my mind, what was some of the compatibility issues that you were talking about that they were experiencing?
The number one compatibility issue was moving the PowerPoints into Impress. None of the video wouldn't come over at all. And some of the sound also had problems coming over, which for teachers who have a two-hour lesson plan with five videos, it's a big deal. Because they literally downloaded the video and then embedded it. You know, it wasn't like they embedded it from the website. They actually had the video on their machine. Uh-huh. So a lot of that screwed up. Now, when we've upgraded to OpenOffice 3, that problem is alleviating. It's not perfect, but a lot of that went away. The other problem we have is state, and this is another, you know, kind of moral dilemma that you kind of have to think about. The state is passing down documents to the school districts that are heavily, heavily formatted. I mean, you've all seen them. If you're in Virginia, or most states do this, go download a state employment application, right? It's got all those god-awful check boxes and just disgusting fields everywhere that you can barely manipulate. And when that gets imported in, it gets completely junked up. The third big problem that we've had is a combination of clip art and fonts, which that one caught me off guard, the fonts. I didn't even think about the fonts. The clip art we spearheaded by downloading open clip art on every machine. But people aren't quite as happy with it. Now, I'm not a connoisseur of clip art, so I can't really speak to that too much, but we're working through it. The fonts, we've kind of had to do a lot of searching and try to get comparable fonts for them. It's, like I say, it's a work in progress.
So these are like fonts that are included with Office, non-standard fonts that people want to drop on their machines, is that it, and have used in their documents in the past?
Microsoft Office pays for a bunch of fonts to be in there, and, you know, these people have already created these documents in these fonts, so when they migrate over, it kind of drops it to this odd, disgusting font. So and it makes them angry.
See, what they need to do is use standard fonts.
Yeah. Teachers don't know the difference between, yeah. Like I say, it's a learning curve. We're working through it. We're trying to explain to people, you know, what the difference between the different fonts are and things like that. And we're slowly working through it. Some of these fonts we can actually get for free and get them on the machine. So it's starting to work out. And that's the kind of stuff that we're trying to document and put up on vaopenclassroom.org. That's the kind of thing that districts are going to want to know. They're not going to think about when they make this kind of move.
So given that, then, what you've gone through so far, now you are, what, three months, not even, I mean, 2 months into the school year? Have you...
Yeah,
has there been an improvement with what's what I'm looking for? The percentages of people who are satisfied, is it still a 50-50 split?
Yeah, so when I say 50-50, that is the improvement. I would say towards the beginning of the year, it would have been more like 99.99% hated me and my boss. But that's actually the exact question that I asked every week, or sometimes 2 weeks. We have kind of a meeting of the minds in our department, saying, okay, where are we? Is this getting better? And it is getting better. I fully expect that towards the middle of the year, you know, January, that we will have that number quite a bit lower. I think we're going to be down towards, you know, 20% or so. Now there's 10% of people you can never please. That's the way it works. But, our goal is certainly just to lower that and get people more accepting. Deptry asked a really good question. Did you identify power users like secretaries to prepare and train people before the transition? What we actually did was we did a train the trainer session, and we had one person in each school that was identified as a power user, and they were trained on various aspects of both the new email suite, Google Apps, and Open Office, so that they can go back to the schools and kind of be a point of contact. And they actually, every person was required to go through training. Well, I say required. Not quite, but close enough. And that was an important aspect of it.
Now, what I'm very surprised about, and I know having worked in a school district, for a number of years, when you make a change like that, wait a minute, that's right, Virginia doesn't have unions, do they?
Nope.
forget what I was going to say. You got off easy, pal. That's all
I say. The unions definitely would have shanked
the goddamn unions, man, busting everybody's balls and making life miserable for everyone. I'll say it. That's all. We're all thinking it. I'll come out and say it.
But yeah,
not
I mean,
you
know,
unions always work for me.
I mean, there's just.
We did go through. We went through the proper channels to get exception, right? We had to go through all the administrative channels, and all the principals agreed to it. It's a very compelling argument when you start to say, "Look, we don't have a license." You know, as of June 1st. So we're either going to move to this, and you put up a nice screenshot of Office 2007, and then you put up a screenshot of Open Office, and I'll tell you what, you put those side to side, what looks more like the Office XP, Office 2003? It's going to be Open Office. So, and then you say, and we're actually going to save $200,000, which we can put towards other things to increase, you know, productivity in the classroom and things like that. All of a sudden, people start listening. Unfortunately, down at the end user level, that stuff doesn't filter down, and basically they think that, well, we did it to screw them, which is not the case at all, of course.
It's another case of the man pinching pennies.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone thinks, you know, I mean, the perception's out there. We in the open source world know it's not true, but the perception is definitely out there that, you know, free means cheap product. And that's
exactly. It can't be worth anything. It can't be any good if it's free.
Right.
All right, so obviously you have switched over. You have saved $200,000. What was the license that you had prior to this?
It was actually an Office XP license, not an Office 2003 license. It was a license for, I think, approximately 2,000 computers.
So this was their software assurance program, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I'd have to go back and look, but no, I actually think we had a per-seat license.
A per-seat? So given that you had a per-seat license, why is it you had... what I'm not understanding is why did you have to upgrade, or why couldn't you just continue using Office XP?
You know, the license agreement that I wasn't there when they signed the original license agreement. It was quite a few years ago. I think it was a five year license agreement. It ran out. It wasn't like we had a open ended license agreement with Microsoft. Nowadays, which surprised me when I started looking into this and the money savings and things. Nowadays, what they told me was they either do it by the amount of people that's going to be using the software program or the amount of computers that you're going to put it on, whichever is less. This is Microsoft I'm talking about. And in our case, it's less for the amount of computers, not people, because we have almost 5,000 students and 800 teachers, so the 2,000 is the better deal. So that's where we got the price point for everything.
Oh, they changed that because it used to be that you had to license every single computer that could possibly run the software in your district, even if it
wasn't
going
to. That's what this is. It basically every computer, but not every user. It was just every physical computer that would be running the software, we would have had to upgrade the license.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't know that they were giving you. They didn't used to give you the option from what I recall, they didn't used to give you the option of whether or not it was per user or per device.
Yeah, it surprised me. They definitely had a different licensing scheme back when I had to do mass purchasing. Yeah, it definitely caught me off guard. Even so, it was an absolutely outrageous amount of money.
So, how did your Microsoft partner feel about you not, you know, coming up, coughing up to $200,000 for licenses?
How did they feel not doing it?
Yeah.
I'd say it's pretty obvious with me that they don't have a very good relationship with me anyway. So I don't think it came in a very big surprise. it's the vendor that we work with I could just say who it is, the CDWG. They make enough money off of us. They're not sweating that we didn't upgrade. At least no one was banging down my door. Another surprise, right? You would think they'd be badgering the hell out of me. Of course, I don't answer my phone, so that does help.
So, what about, did you have to run this past the school board?
Yeah, we did. Basically all the administration had to approve it. And, like I say, you know, my boss, he was a used car salesman in another life. He's an extremely good politician / salesman, and he did a really nice job presenting, you know, like I said, the pros and cons. And when you sit down and look at the pros and cons on paper, I'm telling you, open office is the winner. There's no doubt about it. That's why I think this is so important, and why the Virginia Open Classroom Project is so important. And it's not just specific to Virginia. We're calling that because we're partnering with Virginia to, you know, to get this information out there. But anyone can use this information that we're accumulating. And if anybody wants to get involved with the project, all they have to do is email me, you know, chat@linuxbasement.com. And I would love to have other universities, colleges, school districts, state, you know, the entire, it's Google, it's not Open Office. From what I understand, they're moving to Google Apps in D.C. The entire government is moving to Google App off of Microsoft Office. You know, whatever you think about Google, it's still a better step. It's not the perfect step, but interesting.
How has the students felt about this?
Students, no effect whatsoever. I mean, you know, kids adapt so much easier than grown-ups, and that's just a fact. You know, ask a kid what they're actually using nowadays, and they're not going to say Word and Excel. They're going to say, you know, Firefox and iTunes. They don't really care. And you know, the one thing is our CTE classes, and we talked about this, Dan, but for everybody, the CTE classes, our career and technical education classes, there are still some Office 2003 licenses where they teach and certify specifically in Microsoft Office. So those students are not affected by this. But everywhere else, it's Open Office, and they haven't heard anything about it. Oh, sorry, let me post that link up in the chat here.
Now, have you taken advantage of the opportunity to provide the open disk to all the teachers and students?
Yes, we have. I think we ended up dropping off about 50 copies at every school, and then whenever that supply depletes, we'll go ahead and refresh it. So it's not, we didn't literally go to every student and teacher and hand it to them, but it was made available, and we let everybody know that it was available at the office. So that's kind of cool.
Now, have people taken advantage of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say teachers more than students. Definitely a bunch of teachers have grabbed them, which is cool because there's a lot of great software on that disk. For those who've never checked out the open disk, it's a great introduction for people who are using Windows, but you want to introduce them to open source software. I mean, talk about a bunch of great software. That's a great project.
Now, has this led to interest in other projects like GIMP, Inkscape, Scribus? I'm trying to think of what else is on that. Celestia?
Yeah, that's a real good question. One of the other problems that I didn't mention before, and I'm glad you said that, was a lot of people use Publisher. Now, this is so foreign to me because I have never used Publisher in my life.
How do you make your web pages?
What?
How do you make your web pages if you don't use...
I use FrontPager. No, I'm just kidding. So apparently tons of people use Publisher, and that was another thing that people really threw tomatoes at us for. And I don't know, those of you following me on Identica probably saw me the other day going, what's a good Publisher replacement? Because I'm trying to find a good... The thing about Publisher is it does a lot of really advanced stuff for really non-technical users. And the open source alternatives have quite a bit larger learning curve, such as Scribus, which is the one that I checked out, which was a recommendation from HeathenX and I appreciate it. Yeah. So that's, you know, if anybody else has another recommendation, I'd love to hear it. That's something we're really trying to figure out.
So you found Scribus too difficult? Or you felt it would be too difficult for most people?
It's not difficult for me, but yeah. We have a teacher testing.
Have you ever used Publisher?
It. No, I've never used Publisher.
Because I don't think Scribus is that much more difficult than Publisher.
You know, well, here was the big complaint. The big complaint was publisher had, and this is the same thing with the freaking clip art too. Publisher had a ton of free templates, and when I mean a ton, I mean a ton. So what teachers were doing was just grabbing a template, and that was doing all the work for them, and then just having kids, you know, do a project and then just printing it out. With Scribus, I've not had good luck finding a lot of templates. There are some. In fact, in Ubuntu, you can get them through apt, but I've not found a ton.
You know what? Two things. You're right, and I thought that there was a project out there working on templates for Scribus. But in addition to that, I've heard a lot of people say that there are some really good templates for OpenOffice to mimic some of the work of Publisher.
Yeah, there are, and that was our original solution. To use there are very nice templates for OpenOffice. I don't know how that translates with OpenOffice 3. I would assume that they would roll right over into 3, but I don't know for sure. We got to find out about that. But the quality of this is the complaints that I got from. We have one lady who tests all this stuff out. She's like the Publisher guru, and the feedback I got from her that it just wasn't as easy to manipulate. It was basically you had to learn it all over again. I don't know.
Had to learn. Were you talking about OpenOffice or Scribus?
OpenOffice. I was actually talking about OpenOffice there. With the templates that you can import there. She said specifically that they were not as nice as Publishers. Now, like I said, I've never used Publisher, so I have no idea.
All right, so given this, that there is a learning curve, obviously, and that comes with any product, different change of any product. That learning curve, then, has it been, I mean, have they been able to take the skills they already know with regards to Office and apply them so that the learning curve is not as steep in OpenOffice?
Yeah, you know, it's like anything else. You've got some people who are really good at doing that and some people who literally have a hard time doing that. And then you've got that third group of people who could do it if they would stop bitching and moaning. And, you know, that's pretty much where we're at. We have some people who are doing a great job just making the transition, hitting the help button when they run into a problem, which OpenOffice has great help. It really does. People, you know, and that's something that everybody needs to learn more. We're very fortunate, right, because we all learn technology quick. Some people don't, and they just need to take the initiative to learn how to learn better, you know, and not everybody can do that. It's crazy.
Well, that is very true, and unfortunate to some extent that it makes it so much more difficult to achieve wider spread adoption of different technologies.
Yeah. By the way, I did post that link up, and I'll post it again later, but to the Virginia Open Classroom Project, I just want to tell everybody again that that sucker is under heavy development, so don't go there and think you're going to get all the answers just yet. We only started developing it about 2.5 weeks ago, so it's in the process. There's actually going to be a podcast up there, so people will be able to download, you know, the history of the project, tips and tricks, all sorts of cool stuff. We've got videos up there, and then there's also going to be a bunch of links and tutorials and things like that. So
who's doing the podcast?
It's going to be a combination of myself, my director, and the person we hired to do the integration. I say it's going to be a podcast, but it's not like there's going to be this, you know, jazzy music when it starts and, hey, welcome to OpenOffice Integration. You know, it's not going to be like that. It's basically going to be, well, we have an interview today with this director of technology from this school district. They've recently, you know, implemented Gmail, and we want to talk to them today and just go through, you know, how the implementation went, what went right, what went wrong, that kind of thing.
Now, in addition to, you had said that you had switched over to OpenOffice, you have also adopted Google's applications.
Yeah. Well, we're trying. We're really trying to get people to use the collaborative features on Google Docs. Now, Google Docs is even worse about importing stuff. You import anything with a picture in it into Google Docs, and it's game over. I love Google Docs for its collaboration. I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. Whether I'm a freedom hater or not, you cannot deny the fact that that suite of applications is awesome for collaboration. The problem is it's great for collaboration on documents that you create, you know, now, not stuff that you created 5 years ago and you're trying to import into it. So that's going to be the next point of interest, is to try to get people using those calendars and get it integrated into email. And if you have a document that you know everyone at your grade level is going to use, put it up on Google Docs and share it out that way, and kind of use it as a collaborative platform. Gravity has a great question. He's saying, are we trying to work with Google to improve it? That's actually part of this grant. Google knows about our project. We've spoken with them several times throughout the process. And one of the things we're doing is accumulating all this data, and we're actually bringing that back to Google so that hopefully they can improve it for the K-12 experience.
So what has had a better reception then, do you think, Google Docs or OpenOffice? Or has it been essentially equivalent?
I'm sorry, I thought 330 was yelling at me. I'm sorry, what was the question again?
I said, what has had, in your opinion, a better reception, Google Docs or OpenOffice, or has it been roughly the same?
I would say the Google Apps suite has had better reception than OpenOffice. So Google Apps comes with Gmail, Google Sites, Google Start Page, and all the Google Docs, which is the Google Word Processor, Google Spreadsheet, and Google Presentation. I would say that's had a better reception, but actually less people are using it. So it would be a better reception for the people that are using it, but not everyone is yet. And 330 asked, are there plans to move from Gmail to our own server? And actually, it was quite the opposite. We moved off of Exchange to Gmail to get rid of the physical and personnel requirements of having an email server in-house. The other beautiful thing about Gmail is, for an administrator aspect, is, you know, Google acquired Postini, which is the best spam filtering software in the world. So not only did we get rid of an email server, but we also got rid of our spam appliance and things like that. Everyone's going to, I'm sure, going to throw out, well, you know, you've just given away your freedom and now you have zero security in your email. That may be true, but, you know, we signed an agreement with Google just like we signed an agreement with, Microsoft when we bought Exchange. There's not a huge difference there, except for we don't have to manage it anymore. Does that make sense? Are you guys still there?
Yeah, what about the ads?
Yeah, oh, that's a good question, man. See, that was one thing that I thought everyone was going to get us on. There's only one ad, and it sits right at the top of your email, just like in Gmail, if you have a Gmail account, and no one has said a thing about it. It's there. It's very non-intrusive. I don't think people even realize it's there.
So nobody has complained, not even parents or, well, you know, here we go.
Yeah. What's that?
Dan hit the mute button again.
Ah.
He always does.
I'm sorry. Have they implemented student emails, given the fact that it's Gmail and there's probably a good likelihood that students already have their own?
Yeah, so here's what we're working on right now. We don't have email for any students, and the reason is there's very... there is a lot of legal issues when you give students email. What if a student starts dealing drugs on your email system? Who can be held liable? That kind of thing. However, Google Apps
has your email system, though.
Yeah, but we're responsible for maintaining it. And we're absolutely responsible for the students using something that we're maintaining while they're in school. So, but what we're actually doing is Google has a Google Apps Team Edition now for education, and it basically gives you Google Docs for students without having to require them to have an email account. So we're actually going through this process right now, this week. So very soon here, we will have that process documented, and students will be able to collaborate with their teachers using Google Docs, which is a whole new ball game. It's going to be pretty neat, I think.
But, you know, see, here's the interesting thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, a student goes out and does the Google Docs for teens. It doesn't require them to have a Gmail account. But yet, this is Gmail. Anybody can sign up for a Gmail account.
Yeah, but that's all blocked in-house.
What do you mean blocked in-house?
So this is Google Apps for our domain. This actually runs off of our DNS. Gmail and stuff, Google Docs, are blocked within our district. Nobody can get to that.
Oh.
It's only the stuff for our district that you can get to.
So, then, if it's for your district, is it accessible outside the district then, too?
Yes, it is. So, okay. Basically, you know, we own our own domain, and the... You know, if you go to mail.mcpsweb.org, which is our school district's website, you will be prompted for our Gmail. But it's, you know, it's branded for us, even though it's run on their servers. It is Gmail, it's just it runs off of our domains. You know, and that's the same for Docs and all that stuff. It's really interesting setup.
So is it... Is it running on at Google? Are they hosting it, or is it something that is an appliance that you guys actually have in house?
Yeah, I wish it wasn't. I wish they did have the option for the appliance, because then all your security concerns kind of go out the window, right? But no, it is absolutely hosted on Google's cloud. We don't have anything in house. The only thing that I had to do to set this stuff up was, you know, take a couple of DNS A records and the MX records and point them at Google's DNS servers, and then prove that I was an educational institution, and that was it. And we were set up.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, not so shabby, right?
Now, you have been involved in a couple other efforts, if I'm not mistaken. One is the you're trying to push OOXML adoption.
Yeah.
No, you were actually looking at ODF adoption by the Virginia, was it the state government?
And yeah.
And put together a Drupal site for them, correct?
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. I can talk about that a little bit. The Secretary of Technology, Anish Chopra here, this is the guy who I've been, you know, coordinating with and who's been interested in the open source efforts down here. And I was at a meeting with him, and they started spouting off things like, well, why don't we do a site like Dig, but for Virginia State? And, you know, how much would that cost? And after the meeting, I kind of just pulled him aside and said, look, I could do that for you. I'll do it completely free of charge. And I could do it with open source software. It won't cost the taxpayer a dime. You know, give me a chance. Let me show you what I could do. And so I did it. I did it in like 5 days, and I had these guys blown away. So I implemented the first open source website for the state of Virginia it was a couple months ago. You can check it out. They've slightly butchered it since they've taken it over, changed some things around. I had it set up as like a Dig, and now they have 5 stars on it, and they moved some things around. But you can check it out at ideas.virginia.gov. The significant thing about it is the governor recognized it, and the Secretary of Technology has really kind of touted this as open source and what it can do for the state of Virginia. So I'm really trying to work with him to, you know, kind of, you know, say, look, you can do more than just this. What about, you know, partnering with Google and thinking about getting the ODF standard adopted for the entire state so that all of these, you know, municipalities and all these school districts don't have to buy Office just so they're compatible with the stinking documents that you're pushing out of this at the state level. Why not standardize? And so, you know, I've been trying to push this. You know, it's very slow. It's one step at a time. I'm definitely making progress. I mean, the fact that I got a website up there was pretty cool. And they include me in all open source conversations, which is great. And so I really like that he's open to the ideas. You know, a lot of politicians could just snub me. I mean, he's an important guy. He doesn't have to talk to me. But he's really, truly interested in what open source can do for the state of Virginia. There's no doubt about it. So it's really cool. If anyone goes to the ideas.virginia.gov site, vote for the ODF proposal. Just do a search for ODF and give it 5 stars. They actually do look at that site all the time. They're already, in fact, they're implementing just in this election. One of the things is to implement hunting on Sundays. You'll be voting for it, Dan. And that actually came off the site. So that's one of the things that was really popular on the site, and that's going to go up for in the elections just next Tuesday, which is really cool. So I'm fighting the fight, man. You know, I'm trying to get the stuff in there. Go and vote on ODF. You know, the state of Massachusetts did it. It was a little rough, but they did it. I don't see why. You know, Virginia is a very forward-looking state. I don't see why we can't do it. And then other people will follow.
That's pretty cool. So you're pushing for all this adoption. How far away do you think you are to getting Linux adopted in the school district?
I have the biggest technical limitation in the world standing in front of me, and I have no idea how to push it down. And that is that the testing software for the state Department of Education right now only runs on Windows. And until that changes, you know, I'm trying to converse with them, see what I can do. But until that, you know, it's Pearson. Pearson handles all that. Pearson's in bed with Microsoft. They have no interest in writing a Linux, a Linux client. So, that's all part of this fight that I'm fighting. If I can get, I'll tell you what. After all the people that want to hang me after Open Office, it'll be at least a couple years just so I don't get shot in my own home. But it's definitely something that, you know, there's the Department of Education Technology Conference coming up in December. I'm doing three presentations there, and one of them is about adopting open source and Linux for school districts. And, I want to see it, but we have to get through that technical limitation first. And there's a lot of other pieces of software that don't work that people actually, you know, a lot of book software and things like that that just, you know, they don't run. So it'll be an interesting fight. The thing that could change it all is once these things start really becoming cloud computing friendly, and I hate saying cloud computing, I don't know why I said that, but you know what I'm saying. Everything gets online. The agnostic underlying operating system, that's when I'll, you know, be able to push that harder. But, you know, it's like I say, it's one step at a time. Any open source I can get into the districts and into the state is a win as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, Chad, that website, if you went to the Virginia.gov website, to vote on it, you have to register, right?
You do have to sign up, yeah. It does accept open IDs if you have an open ID.
Now, have you caught the attention of any of the open source projects or communities? Has the Open Office Consortium expressed an interest in what you're doing at all?
No, I haven't talked to anybody. It's just me and a computer, just fighting the fight. I probably should talk to communities better. I'm really bad about that. If it's not already apparent, I'm really bad about getting involved with those communities. I tend to create them instead. I do need to get some more backing. In fact, for this project, I'd love to be sponsored by, you know, openoffice.org. You know, sponsored by the Drupal Association and things like that.
So the person you have that's doing the documentation,
yeah.
Are they, I mean, they, aside from having the skills of documentation, did you hire somebody who has familiarity with OpenOffice and all you know, the open source community, or was that not a requirement?
Yeah, we weren't paying enough to be too picky. However, I think we really lucked out. The person we got is, and I actually considered about asking her to come on here with me. I probably should have.
Why you suck.
I do suck. She worked for, she would come on if you guys ever want to talk to her. She's a real interesting lady. She worked for Tyco, as in the international company, for 35 years, I think. She's in her mid-50s. And she was, her entire time at Tyco, an IT implementation specialist. So she's very tech savvy, and she's extraordinarily good at documentation. However, open source is a completely new world to her. But as you can imagine, you know, her first day, she was stuck in a room with me and a laptop with Linux, and I literally just exploded her mind with the open source concepts and what we were doing, and she is into it. I mean, she is die hard. In literally 3 weeks, or 4 weeks now, she's become just such an advocate. You wouldn't believe it. She is all for, you know, open standards and finding new open source projects to do what she wants, and it's really cool. So not only did we get just this, I mean, she is seriously just a champ as far as business savvy, tech savvy, but she really gets behind, she really believes in what we're doing, so it's cool.
Is she running Linux yet?
No. I'm the only crazy fool that does that. That's actually not true. I've got a couple techs that run Linux now. But,
baby steps. No, baby steps.
Well, yeah, exactly, baby steps. I'm going to wait till Christmas and then pop that on her.
There you go. There you go. You tell her. You gotta get her going right. Another advocate. That is awesome, though. That is good stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. You know, like I said, if anybody at all wants to get involved, just let me know. Slowly but surely, we're going to ramp up. I'm presenting next month at a consortium meeting on the whole project. I'm hopefully going to get a couple more districts on board with it, and then again for the entire state in December. And like I said, you don't have to be in Virginia. This can go nationwide. This is supposed to help anyone who's interested in getting open source software in the classroom. That's the goal. And it's not just OpenOffice, and it's not just Google Apps. I've got a whole bunch of projects that we're going to document, such as Drupal, Moodle, Asterisk, Sakai, just a whole slew of them. And just going to inundate the site with documentation. I appreciate you guys letting me come on and rant about it a little bit, because I really do think it's an important thing.
You should get
in touch.
With
you, man.
You should get in touch with Helios Solutions and do some work with him.
That's actually a great idea. You know, I forgot all about those guys until just this week. I saw a YouTube video with him asking the question at the that meeting. I
know what you're talking about.
Free software? No, it wasn't Free Software Foundation. It was the Linux Foundation.
Yeah, something
like that. IBM, why they aren't doing more Linux commercials. I don't know if everybody's seen that YouTube video, but it was
promoting Linux
funny.
More, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I should contact them. Do they do things everywhere? Are they like Texas-based or something?
They've been, he's trying to spread it across the country, but so far it's been mostly Texas into the West Coast, particularly California and Oregon.
I ought to talk to him, though. You're right, just to see.
You talk to Monster B, he thinks it's all a scam.
Well, obviously, go ahead.
Peter 64 says I sound good when I'm not drunk. Yeah, I leave that to Saturday nights.
Yeah, well, you obviously rubbed Digsits the wrong way because he just threw his beer bottle wall. Which is unfortunate. Can't we have a good neighborhood?
Yeah, so all those people who call me a freedom hater on Linux cranks, you know, I do have interesting opinions as far as proprietary and open source software, but I am out there fighting the fight. It's not like I just talk about it.
Yeah, you're not like Dan.
Or at least that's what I'm telling you.
That's awesome stuff, Chad. It's okay if you hate freedom. We'll let you slide this time.
I appreciate that.
But what you need to do is get a better internet connection.
Yeah, amen to that, man. I'm pretty sure I could do a lot more cool stuff if I had better internet.
Just steal the school stuff.
Well, that's where I'll put the torrent up for IBEX tomorrow. The school's really cool about that, and, you know, letting me, you know, we're hosting that Virginia Open Classroom site on, you know, we host a bunch of web servers up there. Thankfully, we got on fiber just this past summer, and it's incredible. So I'm sitting on a 50 meg internet backbone. It's just good stuff.
Damn.
So will you be hosting the new version of Windows that looks like KDE?
What's up with that? Is it like... So,
have you seen the pictures?
No, I've not, but I heard it's like a cloud computing operating system, is it?
No, there's a couple of different things they're doing. Their regular operating system is they've tagged a Windows 7. I'm going to post a picture in the RSC right now. To me, that looks like KDE 4.1, if you ask me.
I've not seen that.
Take a look at that. Look at that tool. Look at the toolbar.
Pretty close.
I saw an article today that said that Microsoft was coming out with a free cloud computing operating system called, I think it was called Azure. Have you guys heard about this?
I thought Azure was one of the layers on top of Windows.
Maybe so.
Vista or 7.
I don't know anything about it. It just scared the crap out of me. We do not need any kind of free operating system from Microsoft right now. That could put a serious damper on a lot of the fights that I'm fighting, at least.
No, oh, wait. Azure Services Platform. I'm looking at it right now. What does MSPX stand for? Microsoft. What is that? MSPX. Somebody educate me.
I have no idea.
I'm not down with the Windows, sorry.
I'm losing my touch, I guess. But I did know what TechNet was.
Greg says the transsexual at CNET interviewed the MS guy about Azure today. I don't know which transsexual he's referring to. The thing about the new Windows that really is appealing to Dan is they have three big-ass analog clocks, right, Dan?
Yes, they do, sir.
And you're all about the big-ass analog clocks.
You know, you'd be happy to know that the new G phone has a big-ass analog clock.
So is the Open Mocha.
It's awesome.
And I think you could put one on Android, too.
You saw Android. Did you like it?
I like the OS. I'm not that crazy about the actual device itself.
Yeah.
It was better than what I thought it would be. You know, the pictures you see on the internet, it looks like a freaking Palm Pilot, but it's much smaller than that. It's more like a regular phone. And it has this little part that bends up. And it's not bad. You know, it's plastic. Honestly, I wouldn't get it from T-Mobile. You know, they've locked the device to their network.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I don't like that, you know. Supposedly other vendors are working on them. I know Motorola is supposed to come out with their own phone.
Like crazy, apparently. They're
Yeah, they hired a whole shitload of people to work on it.
Yeah.
So, we'll see what comes out with them, you know. You never go out and buy the first generation of any device, you know, because, you know, you're basically beta testing for them, you know.
Yeah.
So, I'll check it out. And if I can get, like, an unlocked phone, maybe I'll pick one up. The rates weren't too bad, though, with T-Mobile. I think they were, like, $35 a month, which is pretty reasonable compared to, you know, what the iPhone goes for.
I don't even have the service here. That's my problem.
Well, you're in the middle of nowhere. Do you have to move your car to cut your grass?
No. I mean, I'm on my cell phone right now, but I only have Verizon and Altel. That's the only thing we have here.
Really? You don't have AT&T down there?
Nope.
So you're
be screwed.
You're in the sticks, yeah.
Yeah.
Like AT&T is actually pretty easy going when it comes to bringing your own device.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they don't care. You know, they give you a SIM chip. As long as you can pop a SIM chip in there, they'll give you one, and then you're on their network.
That's cool. If AT&T were around, I'd be pimping out my iPhone. I'm just kidding.
All right, if you want a quick overview of what Azure is, essentially what it is Microsoft's cloud computing service, which allows, when you're talking about the operating system, is essentially, if we would equate it to what we have in the real internet services world, would be like Microsoft hosting a LAMP stack, but it is their .NET services.
Oh, it's like Amazon S3 then.
Yeah, essentially is what it is. Yeah, it's like Amazon S3 or it is a platform that they're hosting where you can develop through Microsoft's Visual Studio .NET and publish your application on top of Windows Azure and run there.
See, that's going to fail. That's totally going to fail. See, I was worried that they actually had like a cloud operating system. Oh, yeah, no, that'll fail. That'll be fine.
Yeah, but the operating system's on the server end.
Gotcha.
It's yeah. So they're billing it as operating on top of a open platform supporting XML, HTML, SOAP, REST, you know, standards like that, and allowing third party integration for stuff like Eclipse, Ruby, PHP, and Python. So it's essentially Microsoft hosted. Services, the Azure platform is hosted by them, and it's not client-side hosting of an operating system, whereas, you know, they're offering you a downloadable operating system to integrate with it. This is just server-side.
You know, the only thing that scares me about that is it almost sounds like they're starting to get it. You know what I mean? Like, before...
Uh-huh.
It was like IIS 6, let's say. It was just brutal to run... you know, PHP on it, let alone, you know, Ruby on Rails or something like that. It almost seems like they're starting to get that they need to open things up and make outside things compatible with their software if they're ever going to survive. And that's been their big mistake up till now, just only allowing their stuff to run on their stuff. I hope they don't get it too fast.
But, you know, and that's, you know, what if one day they do eventually, you know, pull that off and wisen up to that and get it? Yeah, I mean, it could come. That day could come when, you know, Microsoft has something on par or even, you know, like, I don't know, Microsoft BSD or Microsoft Linux or something. You know, they could come. What do we do?
No, there is Microsoft Linux, remember?
This
sorry to see some people.
Well, I don't know. You know, they are making efforts to extend the olive branch to different projects like Apache and, you know. I don't know. Sometimes that just really frosts me when you talk to somebody who's like a PHP or a Python developer and their platform of choice to use is like Windows. And it's like, what? Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. I can understand it if you're beginning to experiment with that kind of software and you feel more comfortable there, but real developers should not be running Apache on top of Microsoft Server 2003. It's just like, why bother?
Yeah.
You're what are you killing your system resources so you can click on a freaking start menu.
Well, isn't there new, was it the newest server they just released, 2008, or is it the one coming up that you could actually run it without a graphical interface?
Yeah, it's 2008. Yeah, I'm not done in. Because the command line on Windows is a bitch. It's completely counterintuitive. But yeah, you can do it.
What is their command line? I mean, their new, they have a new shell. What's that called?
I don't know.
I always hated Windows Scripting Host. That language was just completely awful. I remember trying to play around with it. It was just so...
Oh, it's terrible. I went to, just this past March, I went to Sans class where Ed Skotus was teaching Windows Kung Fu hacking. You know, he's awesome at the Linux command line, and he was just... Okay, this is completely backwards, but this is how you do the Windows command line. And it is so counterintuitive, it's not even funny.
Man, oh man. So what else, Chad? What else you have for us?
I guess that's it, guys. I really appreciate you letting me come on and talk about that, though. Hopefully, maybe in... a year from now, I'll come on and say, guess what, Virginia's moving to the ODF standard, and we win, and we'll all throw our hats in the air.
Good job, Chad. You know, education, open source, man, it's a no-brainer, you know?
Absolutely. They go hand in hand.
Just got to convince the right people.
That's it. I guess I will leave you guys to your end of show fun, but again, I really appreciate it. And and I'd love to come back when the Drupal guys come on.
Oh yeah, no problem. You know, we're not kicking you off, not at all.
Oh, okay, all right. I'll hang out for a little bit longer because my wife already hates me anyway, so it doesn't matter.
And so that's cool. I guess. One of the things that we have to announce in the future is that wonderful listener from Scotland, who we know is rowing golfer on the various IRC channels, has contacted Scott Sigler, the author, and of the upcoming book Contagious, who also had made his book available as a audio book for free download at scottsigler.com. You can check
and
it out there.
Scott Sigler is one of these pioneers in you know, these guys who write their own content, you know, they write their own books. They've done audio books, you know, for their stories, and they're real innovative. These guys are starting to get published now, and some of their works are even getting turned into film, which is a good thing because, you know, not for nothing, a lot of the crap that comes out of Hollywood is just plain awful. It's all regurgitated remakes, and, you know, and everybody knows remakes suck, you know. So it's really refreshing to see that guys like Scott Sigler, you know, J.C. Hutchins, guys like that, you know, they're actually getting recognized, that publishers are courting them, and they're actually getting their work published. You know, kudos to those guys.
If I'm not mistaken, he has a movie deal, too, and actually, he's enthusiastic about coming on our show, but what Rolling Golfer has done has managed to score 10 copies of his book coming out when it's published with an autograph that we'll be able to give away on the show.
That's awesome.
I really look forward to that. That looks good. Thank you, Rolling Golfer.
Thank you, Rolling Golfer, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, and really.
We are definitely going to have Scott Sigler on an upcoming show. He's excited to be coming on, and I'm excited to have him on. That's some really cool stuff, and you know, it's great to see this kind of community participation. You know, when somebody does stuff like this, it's always great to spread the word so that and show that it's not all about copyrights and patents. Yeah. Oh yeah. So and
speaking of content, that'll be awesome. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Lord Dragonblood contacted me. He's got a new podcast that he's doing called 10 Book Review, and they're talking about different science fiction works, giving it reviews. He just asked.
I didn't even listen to that. Have you guys listened to that yet?
I listened to it. It wasn't bad. I'll post the website in the RC.
Well, why didn't he contact me? I would have put that on the site.
Because you're not cool, Ben. You yell at people and belittle them.
I never belittled Lord Dragon Blues.
I got a few beers into you, Dan. You'll do okay.
That looks pretty cool. Ooh, Hellraiser. Yeah,
and in their first episode, they talk about Hellraiser, which is a great movie. I love Hellraiser.
Cool. That looks awesome.
You ever read Clive Barker?
Yeah, I've read a couple of Clive Barkers.
It's pretty good.
I read a lot of his short some of his short stories. I also started reading, I can't remember what the one about the tapestry. I forget what it's called.
I've read a couple of them, too. The Magic I read. A couple of the others. Good stuff.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff. What was I just about to say? I was about to add something. Damn. Oh, Chad Wallenberg, Linux Cranks. Nah, it's eluding me now. I can't remember what it was about.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, Dan.
What did I do now?
No, not you. But I just had something on my mind that I wanted to bring up. And, damn, now I can't remember what it was. What are you eating?
That's me. I'm eating a jelly bean.
Oh.
Sorry about that.
Shouldn't you be eating candy corn instead?
No, these are these huge freaking jelly beans that one of Carolyn's relatives sends me up from Texas all the time. One of them is like 10 jelly beans.
Really?
Yeah.
They're like the size of like an actual robin's egg.
Yeah, that's about the size of them. Yeah. They're good, but you only like you only need to eat one or two of them, and then you're like bouncing off the wall. If they package them individually, I'd give them out for kids on Halloween, but just to make them crazy in front of their parents. But
I like jelly beans. Jelly beans are delicious. Damn it! Now I can't remember what I wanted to bring up.
That you're gonna definitely get Windows 7 installed on all your machines.
Yeah, it's already there. It's already there, man. Come on. That's good quality software. That's good quality programming.
Yeah, I posted when I saw that on Dig. I was like the third person to post. I was like, man, they're ripping off KDE 4.1. Those people have no shame in Redmond. And everybody just modded me down for my comment. Pretty funny. If I'm getting nailed like that in Dig, man, I think I'm doing something right. Dig is like gone downhill, man. It's pretty awful.
So it's Windows 7 that looks like KDE?
Yeah, Windows 7.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
You know what? I remember what it was now. I just wanted to make mention that, and I haven't listened to their show, but I saw their postings on the LinuxPlanet.org. blog section. I guess Linux Action Show is going to an all-video podcast as opposed to an audio podcast now, so that's going to be an interesting change of events there.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No, but I won't be able to, I won't listen to it. I don't have a video player.
I'm assuming they're going to be all YouTubed, so to speak. They're going to be like 5-10 minute clips.
On YouTube.
Yeah, via YouTube from their site, so you wouldn't necessarily download it anyhow.
Interesting move.
Yeah, my Windows 7 comment is at -46 digs. Awesome.
And Chad, they don't give a damn whether you download it or not, pal.
I know they don't.
They specifically said, and if Chad doesn't like it, he can go to hell. But I think it's an interesting move. At first I thought to myself, boy, that's the end of them for me. But I think that, I wish them the best of luck, and I hope that they do achieve some success, because the audience that they seem to be going after and they are trying to attract new people to Linux, and I think by going the YouTube route, they might just be able to, pull some of that off to show some of the flash. And, they're doing stuff that some other people aren't doing, so good luck to them.
Yeah, good luck. I'll miss the downloading the audio. That's interesting.
I'll miss it, too. Yeah, I'll miss it, too.
It's going to suck, man. I won't be able to watch those videos while I'm driving my car on the way to work.
Exactly. Well,
you could if you pull them down with a flash downloader and then watch them as you're driving. What you need to do is carpool with Alan and have him drive you.
Well, no, what you can do is you can put it on the dash, and if it's dark, it'll reflect off the windshield, and you'll be able to see it.
But wouldn't you have to do it? You have to make sure you put it upside down, though, right?
Yeah, it's going to be sort of backwards, but it's watchable.
So I guess I have to listen to where they announce this. Are they actually going to make it more visual? Are they going to do demonstrations and stuff? Because just sitting and looking at their ugly mugs is definitely not. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the prettiest guy in the world, but just watching.
No,
them,
I think they're going.
You've got
to
a face for radio, Chad.
I know. I definitely do.
I think they're going to be doing some screencasting type stuff in addition to it, I would assume. But it's not just going to be them sitting there talking.
They had one today. They were talking about that Rain Slick Precipice game. The second one came out.
The second one came out?
Yes, it did today.
Second chapter?
Oh, dude, I had no idea. Oh, I'm so buying that as soon as I get off.
It's not bad, man, for $15.
I loved the first one. And I'm a freedom hater, right?
That's it. Did you watch it, Pat? Did you watch the one that they put out about the
Yes,
rain?
I did.
And were they showing the video of the game?
Yes, they were.
Okay, so that's cool.
What, did they just stick the camera in front of the computer screen?
I don't know how they did it. It looked like decent quality. The video of the game actually looked better than them.
But that's pretty cool. We'll have to find out how they did that, whether they did it with Apple or Windows. Oh, yeah, I went there.
Definitely Apple.
Speaking of people, what has happened to Randy Noseworthy? I haven't seen him seen him around since OLF on any channel.
He's been on Identica.
Dude, he's driving a truck, man.
Yeah.
Well, I know that, but usually he's you hear from him.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him in a couple of weeks either. You're right.
I got to make sure he's on my Identica watch list. My most, my notorious Randy IG. All right. What else, peoples?
Don't know. What else?
I don't know, you tell me. Nasty boys.
I got one of those Olympia LS-10s that Dave Yates was talking about, and they're absolutely incredible.
Voice recorders?
Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable.
How do you like it?
It's great. Plug and play with Linux, can't beat that.
So you're going to start podcasting in your car now?
Absolutely.
There hasn't been a slew of copycat Dave Yates people.
Yeah, it's me now.
So you had a first.
When he mentioned it, we were trying to figure out how we were going to get this lady to do interviews and stuff for the Virginia Open Classroom site. So I'm like, well, this is the perfect thing. So we bought a couple and we're testing them out. But it's definitely allowed me to record more often. You know, just pop it out and start recording. It's a great little device. Expensive as hell, but it's a great little device.
I sort of like my Zoom here. My Zoom H2.
Is that a Zoom or no? Zoom. No, that's the one you had at OLF, right?
Yeah.
That's sweet.
That works real nice. You can plug in a card. It works with Linux as well. Got four microphones in it.
That's
pretty good, actually. Yeah, you can record from both sides of it, so it'll do directional for you.
That was the interesting thing about the Olympia, is it, you can actually mount it and point it, and it'll pick up, you know, straight across a room. It's pretty interesting how you can, you know, be directional with it. It's pretty neat. But yeah, I do have a Honda Civic too. That's the unfortunate thing. I'm not going to tell people too much that I'm podcasting in my car now, but I definitely did. I'm so a Dave Yates wannabe now, aren't I? Damn it.
Are you going to have an electronic voice introduce your show?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. It's important that you carry on in your idol's footstep.
I'll switch it up a little bit. Like it'll have a lisp. Yeah, that'll be good.
That is
Did you guys see Code Weavers? They offered free copies of Crossover Office yesterday.
You know what?
I downloaded that stuff, but I never got the serial code for it yet.
Well, they were getting hammered.
Yeah, big time. So you guys know why they were doing that? I mean, is this just to get their name out there? Or?
I think so. It's just free.
It had something to do with like a gas price challenge on it somewhere. So I was reading up on it. I can't remember where it was, but if they said that it was a challenge that if the gas price went below a certain amount, they'd give away their stuff for free for a day.
Wow. It was a shitty bet, essentially.
Yeah, it was a shitty bet, and I guess they lost. I guess they never expected that it would actually go down.
That is great. Well, I'm glad I downloaded it.
I forgot to download it when I got home last night.
Here's what always happens when I download that stuff. I get all excited, right? And then I load it up, and then I look at the applications, and I'm like, oh, I don't run any of these. And then I just forget about it.
You can run Half-Life 2 or Call of Duty 2.
Photoshop, Chad. You can do your, you can retrain yourself on Photoshop.
It's got to be, what, like CS2? Or it has to be the exact version. I guess I'm kind of over Photoshop now. We talked about it a little bit. I'm trying very hard to train myself in GIMP.
Yeah, lame duck presidential challenge.
There's the KDE. What's the KDE, graphical app, graphic manipulation program? Krita?
Krita, yeah.
Where is
Never
that?
Never tried that. Oh, where was that I noticed? I think did it have Spore? I think you can install Spore as one of the games? No, that wasn't Code Weaver. Where did I see that? Oh, you know
sure
what? That was under Wine Doors. Wine Doors will allow you to install Spore.
Crossover and Wine are the same thing, man.
Yeah,
it's the
yeah,
same
I know
people.
That.
Okay, Code Weaver is, you know, they employ a bunch of people who are wine developers.
Right.
In fact, the wine project maintainer who we interviewed, he works for Code Weavers.
Yeah, which is cool. I like the project. I have a really hard time configuring things in Wine, so I do like having the, you know, the dummy button. Push it and run.
Well, crossover is pretty easy.
Yeah, it is.
I have that.
It is.
Damn. I don't have KOffice installed on my Ubuntu laptop.
Well, shame on you, Dan.
I know. What's going on? I failed.
It probably doesn't run in KDE 4.
I've got a story for you, Dan.
Okay, go ahead.
Netflix, you know, they have like an online movie streaming service.
Uh-huh.
Well, apparently that uses Moonlight.
Silverlight.
They're talking about porting it so that it runs on Linux via Moonlight.
Yeah, how about that? I did see that.
I'm sure that makes
you thrilled about that, but...
Because I know you're a big supporter of Mono.
Yeah. You know, I just, once again, purged Mono from my workstation at work when it somehow installed itself on the upgrade. But it didn't do that on my laptop. So, you know, now if I want Netflix, I'll have to go Moonlight.
But Netflix usually makes really good business decisions. What a poor decision to use Silverlight. Like, why would they do that? It makes no sense.
Well, I think they need the DRM support, and I mean, what other streaming solution is there out there for that? I mean, it can't be Flash-based. That would be god-awful.
It's Netflix. Can't they just build their own or something that's cross-platform? I don't know.
You got me. You know, I agree with you. Microsoft must have made them a really sweet deal.
I'm sure they did.
They paid
them off.
Yeah.
We shall see how well it goes. Well, you know, maybe I shouldn't say that Flash is a poor idea, because what Hulu uses Flash, and I've watched movies off of there, and that has worked very well.
Yeah, and they still lock it down like a mother, so Netflix ought to be able to.
Yeah, they don't even have to lock it down. I mean, everything's free off of there, and except you just have to watch commercials every 15 minutes, which are not, I mean, one commercial, it's not too bad.
Yeah, but you can't download them off of Hulu.
Yeah, that's true.
Like on YouTube, you can just hit a button and boom, you got the video, but not so much.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that would be the same thing with, I guess, Netflix now. That's only going to be streaming, isn't it? That's not... Would you actually be able to download with Silverlight?
I don't know. That's a good question. I can't use it because I run Linux.
I'm going to ask Miguel.
That's right.
That's the way it goes.
So what's our song for tonight, Dan?
I was just going to play another Severed Fifth song.
I have to turn down the headphones.
Yeah, that'd probably be a good
more
idea.
Cookie Monster rock for you.
Yep. So, unless there's anything else, gentlemen, I guess we should probably wrap it up here.
Well, thanks again, guys. Take care. I really appreciate it. And I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Shane.
Have
good
a great
you,
night. We'll talk to you in. I'll talk to you on the IRC definitely, but you'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm on. All right, take care.
Drupal, have a good one.
Have a good one.
Next week,
all right.
Next week we're talking to the OpenStreetMap guys.
I can't wait. I've been waiting for that one. Dave Yates, eat your heart out, pal. We got the OpenStreetMap guys. So I guess if that's it, I'll play us out.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Thank you. Happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween.
Happy, happy days. Have a great one.
Good night.
Here it is, Severed Fifth. Denied by Rain, take the test, because I've been waiting to hear it, and I haven't listened to it yet. Here we go. Waiting, waiting,
waiting,
waiting. Wow.
Buffering, buffering, buffering.
Waiting. Why does Rhythmbox like to run too well under KDE? Come on.
Anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
It's over.
It's over.
Maybe we should just have you do the ending there, Alan.
Seriously. I've been hearing it for so long.
Yes. Oh, well, that's it, gentlemen.
Hey, next week we want to hear your song at the end.
I will get it.
The creepy girl song.
I will. What episode? Do we remember what episode that was from?
59, I think it was.
259?
It was 59 or 60. 59 or 60. One of those two.
I'll see if I have all the episodes over here, so I will find. One of those two. What is this episode? 271 or 2?
271.
Okay. All right.
Hey, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good one.
Talk to y'all later.
You too. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hello? Can you hear me? Pat?
I can hear you, man.
All right.
That wasn't me coming in and out. I've been here.
No, that was me coming in and out.
Oh, is that why I got all echoey?
Is it echoey now?
No.
Yeah, something like that. Where are we here? Oh, what did I do? How did I I blame Rowing Golfer on that. This Milwaukee's Best Ice. That's really good stuff.
Hello. You're into shitty beer.
I like good old classic and American beer. How you doing, Alan?
Nah, not too bad.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
How's everybody?
Can't complain.
Das ist gut.
What's our mount point? It's TLLTS all the time, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Why do I keep forgetting that? Oh, yeah. There we go.
So oh, yeah. Question, Dan. When are we going to hear you sing at the end of our show, like you do at the end of Linux Outlaws?
That was from one of our episodes.
That was on our show.
I know it was, but for the ending song, we should put that on.
I need to get a copy of that from Linux Outlaws, so I don't have to, because I'm too lazy to go cut it out myself.
Creepy girl.
Yeah, you got to cut that out, put it at the end of our show.
He did put it on at the end of
our show. I was laughing when I heard that.
Yeah, so was I. I just listened to it today.
I'm like, what the fuck is he playing to? And I realize you're playing to the Asterix music.
Yeah. Because the Asterix music is all that, a bag of shit. Wait, where are we going?
Jamming.
And I love how perfectly he stopped as soon as you got on that. It was like, oh, what are you doing now? Okay, all right. It was perfect. You couldn't cut it any better. What the fuck am I clicking here? Ah, yes, it's here.
Actually, that wasn't at the end of a show. That was at the beginning. But
that's
it was
what I mean.
To the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I have to do. I got to close my Twitter account. Because people keep signing up for my Twitter account. I never use it.
It's all Identica, man.
It's all about the Identica, baby. It's all about the collard greens, baby. Gotta mix that in with the pasta.
Hello?
Hi, Link. How you doing? You sound really bad tonight. You sound feminine.
I'm on my Mac.
Oh, you're on your Mac.
Back to my Mac.
Are you running iLife over there? iWorks.
Yeah, I'm photo booting myself right now.
That's the way you do it.
What's up, guys?
Hey,
Do you
by chance have any glass in your hair tonight?
No, but to commemorate, I can probably have my wife throw something at me right in the middle of the show.
That would be cool. You know what? We should have just had like a sound effect of glass breaking when every time you talk. Alan, find some glass shattering.
Yeah.
Right towards the end of every conversation, and I'll go, you're about 7 seconds away from getting your ass kicked.
You guys will be pleasantly surprised that I am fully ready for tonight's show.
Excellent.
I have all the music all ready to go, both the intro and the outro. Everything's all set. Means it's still going to screw up anyhow, but... Right, Chad?
I'm glad you're ready.
What I can't find, though, is any Parmesan cheese. Damn. I like my Parmesan cheese freshly grated. I don't know about you guys.
freshly grated.
That store-bought in a powdered version just doesn't cut it for the old Danner anymore. I need to have mine freshly grated.
Wow.
I need my cat to give me back my plug. What do you mean, wow? Don't you feel the same way?
You're pretty spoiled.
It's not spoiled, Chad. It's called living. Now, granted, I grate my own Parmesan cheese. I don't settle for
from the bottom of your feet.
You don't whip the kids to do it.
The kids can clean my toilet, not work on my food. I don't want to put... No, actually, my daughter makes cookies a lot. From scratch. Have you guys seen Dave Yates' wearable computer on the forum?
Nah.
Yeah, I saw that.
If you go over to our forum, Dave, there's a picture of Dave Yates and his wearable computer. It's really, really
cool.
That
is awesome. I saw that, man. Great picture.
Now, I wonder if he's going to be incorporating that into his mobile podcasting studio.
He can hang it off the back of the chair. Back of the driver's seat.
There you go.
All depends if he's going to be running around in his underwear.
Well, that's true.
Tell you what, though, that motherboard against his chest must get pretty hot.
Well, at least he doesn't have it next to his nuts.
That's where the webcam goes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
What's wrong there, Chad?
I'm just trying to load the pages on my god-awful freaking internet connection.
You got satellite, man. You should be lightning fast. Who's your provider?
Oh, it's blazing after 15 seconds of latency. I'm on Wild Blue.
Dave wants a link to the picture.
Dude, me too.
Somebody want to post a link to the... I'll do it. God. Everybody just wants it handed to them like this is the internets or something.
Yeah, exactly. Be our Google.
All right, here we go.
Hey, it's the Halloween show, too, so we have to make some scary noises.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that picture is scary enough.
Scary enough having me up.
All right, there we go. Chad and Dave, you can... Well, Dave already knows what he looks like with his wearable computer on.
Good work. Good work. I'll laugh at it in a good minute and a half or so.
Computer man.
I'd also like to thank Lucifer for posting in the forum today.
Yes, the Dark Prince has graced his presence again. He has cast his lot. He's cast his lot with Randall Schwartz once weekly.
Now, you know, before anybody starts casting aspersions or pointing fingers, I cannot take credit for snapping the picture of Dave Yates with his wearable computer. All right? You'll have to thank Greg H. for that. Yes, ma'am.
A kickstand is, like, something that you put, like, music or paper on to, like, make a speech or something, right?
No.
You know, if he was using serial ATA, you'd probably see a little something there.
Is Dave running? Is Dave running Windows on that computer?
Hell yeah, he is. I see that bloody start menu.
And when Dave walks around with the wearable computer on, he has to lay behind the couch so he doesn't make too much noise for his wife. Oh. Dun, dun, dun. What's new, Alan? What have you been up
to? Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. I'm just reading some comics here.
Comics?
Yeah, going back through Joy of Tech and stuff like that.
Oh.
Online stuff.
Who just jumped in?
I just jumped in.
Oh, it's sickly.
Yeah.
Sickly.
What'd you think of Dave Yates' wearable computer?
That's some sexy stuff right there.
See, and that's what makes the forum so much worth it, you know? When people like Dave Yates post their technology advances, their hobbies.
Yes, sirree. Dave's got nice legs, too. Check it out. Yeah. It's a good thing that, you know, there are people like Dave out there who are unabashedly enthusiastic about their computing experience. You know?
You know, I think he actually shaved for these pictures, too.
It could be. It could be. It almost looks like swimmer's legs there, you know.
Swimmer's legs. All right, Dan, start the show. It's 8:30.
Well, I guess you would have to shave. After a few times that you tried to get that electrical tape off.
You get a couple of chest hairs caught in that power fan there, you know.
Ontario Linux Fest happened already, right?
Yes, it did last weekend.